Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Folks, welcome to Dungeons and Randomness. Since 2012, myself and an amazing cast of 18 have been telling stories in our homebrew world of Theria. Four different groups explore lost ruins, run for political office, rage against a mad king, set sail to long-forgotten islands, and so much more. Every group has a different story and flavor, and every season, or arc, has a new set of groups and stories, all building the history of our world with every single session. Literally hundreds of hours of stories are waiting for you as part of the Pickaxe Network. Check out Dungeons and Randomness wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you around the table.
Board games.
Well, hello, and welcome back to this week's round table. We're finishing out season two with a bang. it's been a fantastic season. We've had loads of people on. I think we've had a total of like 9 episodes. We've been really around the block. We've had Yogs cast on. We've had board game creators. We've had board game writers, people in magazines, all over the shop. And hopefully we'll continue going upwards and onwards as we invite more guests into season three. So thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for joining us in this round table as well. We're going to talk a bit about some of the games that we've seen, some of the scenarios that we liked, and generally to have a bit of a chat about anything that we want to see in maybe season three. A little bit of announcement about that in a little while. And any of our favorite games that we've also recommended, anything we didn't get to recommend. So I guess what we'll start with is, was there any scenarios that you particularly enjoyed, any guests that we had that you thought, yeah, this one was really good?
I think Matt Edmondson has to be a highlight for me, because at the beginning of the series, I didn't even know he had his own publishing company and he like produces his own board games. And then to find out that he's got like several games, at least 5, that he's made. And some of them are absolute bangers, like Noggin. I know we talked about it on his episode, but like that system with the 3 cards and then the sort of category cards and using the other letters as the answers is so clever. We did an event for Chance Encounters where we kind of did something at the university and we were like introducing, and I found that was just a really easy game to get people into, like started, you know, it was like a lighter introduction game, like a starter game. And I thought that was, you know, it's clever, and you know, he's such a busy man. Like, how the heck we even got him on the podcast is incredible. Like, because he's like, he's a TV presenter, he's a Radio 1 DJ. He's also a behind the scenes, like he produces TV shows as well. In fact, like one of the things that we weren't sure if we'd be able to get him is because he's making the show for Channel 4. And it's like, what the heck? How did we even get him on the show?
That was impressive. That was a good get, guys.
Yeah. But he was super lovely as well, like super
keen. It didn't take a lot, I'm not going to lie. We saw him at the UK Games Expo, we chatted to him, and he was super keen. He's so friendly, and he was really into like board games, and just he oozes that knowledge. Like, you probably have known him mostly from Obama Llama, which is the one that he produced with Big Potato. We've already done the introductions, but he was a really fantastic person, like off camera and everything else. So
yeah.
You know what, in all honesty, I was really surprised. Most of the guests we've had we've had a lot of Yogg's guests in the past, but most of the guests this season have been like more board game centric people. And I was just kind of blown away with how friendly and chatty and lovely everyone was to talk to. Because there's obviously like stereotypes about board game enthusiasts. But these guys did not tick all those boxes in one bit. No, everyone's been great, and I've really enjoyed all of our guests.
I did want to say though, because it is important, I think I might have mentioned this, but with Matt's game, which we played after the recording of the podcast, because during the podcast, obviously, you'll have seen that he told me that he let me win, and yes. I'm still not sure if that was the case.
Everyone
but
else is sure.
Yeah, but we did play his game where he did agree to...
destroyed you.
Not in the first game, he won. But the second game, we tied.
Yeah, but he was so much more chill in that second game.
I'm not sure.
Ross, you tell yourself what you want. Matt Edmondson is a god at his games because he literally makes them the way he thinks. And yeah. he just knows everything.
No, I think I genuinely think he was trying to beat me in both games, and I managed to claw my way to a draw. I didn't beat him, but I'll take a draw. No matter what you say, I feel like he was trying at that game, and I will not let him change my mind.
Just think, in that first game, it was so one-sided, and then in the second game, he really took his foot off the gas. That's what it felt like. As a technically a player, but actually a spectator in that game, of both of them.
I think I managed to get one at
I got
best.
One or two points in that. He was very good at that.
Yeah, it was just basically, we were just, it was like tennis. You're just like, Russ, Matt. Yeah,
you did very well.
Yeah.
You were the only one who got more than 1 point.
That's true. But no, we had that. It was great. To be honest, some of the people that I've actually enjoyed was like Boba and Alex. They were the most friendly, just love. Like, obviously, you'd expect them to be lovely and friendly, but they were fantastic. And they were, I just found coming
Which
out of those
Alex?
Episodes. Well, actually, that's a good point. We had Alex and Alex, and we also had Matt and Matt this season.
I was
specifically meaning Alex the Rambler, which we went again and had some games afterwards with Alex, and it was so fascinating. And he was such a lovely person. Mm-hmm. And Boba is like so creative. And everything that I've seen on Yorks and all the rest of it, they're both just lovely. So when we were doing that, it felt as easy as breathing just to have a fantastically interesting conversation with them, because that was it was just really cool.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to come as a surprise to anyone that the Shakespeare scenario was definitely my favorite of the season.
I just loved your writers.
I was there just like, yes, do the thing, happy days. Like, yeah. It was really nice to have a scenario as well where the guest wasn't playing. That somehow felt like a little bit different, a little bit weirder, and kind of having to really think outside the box for that one was really, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Even if there was some Scottish slander on my people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, it was a really interesting one. Brought back all of my Shakespeare childhood memories of the distressing times of GCSEs. But, you know, I managed to get through that with some therapy. We're fine. We're okay. We're on the other side safely. But no, I mean, we've also had some great board games that we've recommended this season. We've almost recommended Herd Mentality twice, but I didn't.
Legal loophole.
Legal loophole. Yeah. And I've just been like, I think all of the games that everyone's recommended this season I've either wanted to play, but I just haven't had time for doing all of them. But suddenly my list of games that I need to play has extended.
God, it's growing. Yeah, you guys are recommending games that sound amazing faster than I can play them.
Yes.
Stop it. Recommend bad games now.
We're done here. We're just gonna have to take a pause just so we can catch up, play all the games, and then we'll come back to her.
Yeah, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but you keep recommending games and then we're going, I think they're out of print. I'm like, damn it.
Yeah, that's the problem. Most of my games are old games. I don't have time to play new games.
Hotness, what's that? Ben's coldness list. Those are the out of print games that you just can't play.
Get on the coldness train. I think part of the problem is the way I look for games is quite different to other people. I think a lot of other people are like, oh, this sounds cool, this is hot, and that sounds interesting, and they're trying all these new things or watching Kickstarter or whatever. And I'm sat there going, I want to play a game like this. And I start Googling, what game? I want a game that does X, Y, and Z. And I find it, and it's like, oh, yeah, back in 2006, someone made that exact game. Amazing. I will go find a copy.
That's such a strange way of like looking for board games. What? How have I only just learned this?
But it kind of makes sense, right? If you narrow down all the mechanics and like themes that you quite like, then it makes sense to go off and try and find that subgenre of stuff.
Well, that's where I found... oh, God, I've already forgotten the name of it. The deck building map game fantasy board game that I recommended.
Do you remember? Who did you recommend it to?
Mythotopia?
Mythotopia, that was it. Yeah. Thank you. That's how I found that game. That's like a really old, obscure game. But But I wanted to find a deck building game that was also like a 4X map game. And I was like, why doesn't this game exist? I'm going to make one. And then I Googled and I was like, oh no, it does exist.
Someone's like, that's your first instinct is I'll make one. Make this game.
That's how you know you're a real board gamer at heart.
But the thing is that even in that, knowing what mechanics you like, a game is more than just the sum of the mechanisms involved. Yes. Like there's a lot more going on. It's how they're utilized, whether they work well together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even, you know, the designer, like I would definitely trust certain designers to be able to use like different mechanisms, mechanics well, over, and also some companies as well, I think are better at making, like certain kinds of games. So yeah, I guess it's just what I'm trying to say, it's almost like a recipe, isn't it?
Yeah
you can use eggs in different things, but depending on what you know, what you do, like it's going to get you completely different results. So that's why I'm kind of curious that you do it via,
and it's not very efficient and I'm often crushingly disappointed because I have an idea in my head of the game I want to play, and then I find it and I get it and I'm like, this isn't that. Like, technically it is. Like, it ticks all the boxes, but it's not what I want.
It's got no soul. It's just a construct.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, there's someone going to meet us one day, having listened to the podcast, and kind of finally see our faces and be like, they don't sound like their voice. You know, the face does not match the voice. I had that. My mum listened to The Archers for years, religiously. And then we were in a restaurant, and one of the actors who played one of the characters was on the table next, and my dad pointed it out. I've never seen my mom so upset.
Really?
She was like, I knew what they looked like in my head and you've ruined it.
Like, so who ruined it?
My father ruined it by pointing out the actor, and the actor was not as my mom expected them to look.
I think it's often the way with radio and audiobook, like voice actors and radio stars. It's, you almost always imagine them totally different to the way they are, because they have such amazing voices. I guess if they I don't want to be rude when people say face for radio, but I guess if their appearance matched their voice, maybe they would actually be like a screen actor rather than a voice actor.
Potentially, yeah. I mean,
not always the case.
We
obviously
ruined it by sticking ourselves on YouTube.
Exactly. Well, there's no illusions
here.
We've prevented that thing by
putting ourselves on YouTube. It's like voice actor, like you were saying about, you know, like Rick and Morty and Archer, like John H. Benjamin and Justin Roiland. I wouldn't have pictured them to look like they do.
That voice so matches that character.
Yeah.
You're never going to be, it's never going to match up when you see them, no matter what.
Funny how we do that, though.
I think the one that really sticks to mind for me is, it's a Bristol legend, George Ezra. Because the first time I actually heard his voice, and then my brother was just like, just picture who you think this person looks like in your head. And then he showed me a picture of George Ezra. And it's not like he isn't an attractive person. It's just a case of, doesn't look how I would immediately have pictured his really deep, resonant voice. So it's quite interesting. Is there any games that you guys have either recommended or haven't managed to recommend that you were particularly keen on this season?
Good question.
It's a tricky one to answer, because I've had a bit of a gaming drought the last couple of months. I've been a bit busy with work, and I've been painting a lot of miniatures, and I just haven't played many new board games for a while. I did do one of my classic why doesn't this game exist recently, where I was watching a lot of like competitive StarCraft while I was painting. And I got really into it. And I was just like, I love StarCraft. It's a great, like, real-time strategy game. But I'm an old slow man, and there's a limit on how many actions per minute I'm willing to invest in this game. And that is the limit I'm willing to achieve is not competitive. Yeah. I've aged out. My StarCraft days are over. But I really wanted there to be, like, a turn-based game that captures the essence of StarCraft.
Did you find one?
Well, I've been Googling around a lot, and I've got three games on order that are arriving this week.
Okay.
and that I'm going to audition them for the role of turn-based StarCraft.
Like Mamma Mia, but board games, which is the one for me.
Exactly. So I guess maybe I'll come back next season and let you know if any of these games have scratched that itch.
Mamma Meeple.
Mamma Meeples. Oh, my God.
That's going to be the one that you create because none of these scratch the itch.
None of them match up, probably, yeah, and yeah. I'll do it myself. Damn it. But yeah, if there's anyone out there who has played like games that really like take that essence of like greed and economy and hidden information and unit composition and position on a board, but it's not a frantic click fest, let me know.
Has anyone played the League of Legends game?
The video game?
Mechs and Mechanics.
Sure. No, I haven't. Oh, is that actually League
there
of Legends?
There is a League of Legends,
called Mechs.
Mechs and Minions?
Mechs vs. Minions.
No, I've seen Mechs and Minions, but I didn't know it was a League of Legends IP.
Yeah.
I did not know.
Mm. Yeah, no,
It was big in the cap. Well, one of our colleagues had it for a while, and it used to be the lock-in game of choice.
Yeah.
The after hours, go and find somewhere to sit and play that until like early hours of the morning.
Yeah.
But I was never on those shifts.
Oh no.
No, never got to play it. But I heard good things.
Yeah. No, I believe it had a pretty well received audience. Although I don't think I haven't heard of it being reprinted. Mm. I remember at the time it seemed to be something good.
From what I remember, it was one of those incredibly ambitious productions that kind of didn't lend itself to a reprint just because it was so massive that everyone who would have wanted to spend that kind of dollar on a game like that has already done
their market
there. With one printing there. Mm. And then it was done.
But that could be like first thing I think of when I'm clicking, not necessarily RTSs per se,
but MOBAs share a lot of common. MOBA.
Exactly. Mm. I'd be wondering if you could play. If can you imagine you've got the age categories of like StarCraft, you're like you're only allowed a maximum ABM of 200 to be in this category, and then you just get to last 10
like
seconds
weight,
of a
weight,
minute
like
or something.
A boxing weight thing.
Yeah, and then you just be like, I've clicked myself out. My hero is just standing there now. I can't do anything.
I've got 30 seconds, or I'm not allowed to take any action.
Exactly. Can you imagine that in competitive play?
Oh my God! Just put a limiter on. That'd be amazing.
That would be insane.
Oh my God.
I'd like to see how that just changes gameplay. It'd just be an interesting experiment.
Mm. You should probably mod that in.
Pros would not be happy.
Who
with
would
that.
Play with that? Though? Exactly. Yeah,
it'd be a challenge mode because I've been watching like people like pros play. Like, what happens if we don't have Fog of War? Or what happens if everything has double health?
Yeah,
or if we play on double speed? Like, it's just like for experiment's sake.
Yeah,
And for YouTube clickbait, I imagine.
Probably more that.
But that'd be amazing. What if there's just like a hard cap on clicks?
Every time you've got a minute and then it just refreshes, you use over it, you're screwed.
I love the idea of two armies just bumping into each other and then stopping.
Wait this out, boys.
Another 10 seconds on the timer. It's going to be the most epic battle we've ever seen.
A game that I didn't recommend because I didn't play it until very late into the season is a Richard Garfield game called Dungeons, Dice, and Danger. Now, there's those three words for sure. I'm not entirely 100% they're in that order, but if you Google it, you'll probably find it. Mm-hmm. Richard Garfield was the man behind Magic the Gathering and King of Tokyo as well. Not a lot of people know he designed that game. Yeah,
And Keyforge.
Hive Mind
as well. Oh, did he do Hive Mind?
Yeah. He did Hive Mind.
Oh, wow,
well.
Yeah.
He's very
one of those,
prolific.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's almost got like that Vlada Tvatil level of adaptability and variety in the games that he creates. It's called Dungeons, Dice, and Danger. It's a roll and write.
You're so into roll and write these
really
days.
I can't remember who I was chatting to about it, but they were kind of annoyed at how many things were having roll and write editions. Mm-hmm. And I said to them, I think, you know, the point is if people are interested in it and people are buying these games and like consuming them, I get it. That's exactly why they keep making them. But I also think it's just a nice... I'd say it's a nice challenge for the designers of said games in the past to create roll and write versions of games. How do you make it different enough from its core and still kind of make it fun and and like enjoyable to play and make it, because it's not just roll and write, it's also flip and write and roll and moves. That, but yeah, the game
just
is
take two random adjectives, yeah, and like, stick it together,
stick roll and twist, spin, yeah,
flip and bounce,
yeah, exactly,
squash it,
yeah,
punch it.
But it is, it's not based off an existing IP or anything, it's just a new roll and write game. You know, you've got this dungeon map which is made up of just loads of rooms that are connected to other rooms, with some monsters in some of the rooms and like some treasure and other ones, and it's essentially the active player will roll four white dice and one black dice, and they'll pair two up, so you'll make two pairs out of those dice, and the numbers are the ways that you explore around the map. So like the room might need you to have a seven, so you need to pair up a seven in order to explore into that room. Some of the ways that you defeat monsters as well are the same, so like, oh, you need a 4 or an 11 to defeat this monster, but hey, if you activate this room, suddenly now you can use a 5 to defeat this monster as well, so every time you use that number you can do a little bit of damage. It's neat. But we did play the first game, I introduced it to people who are new. There were three sort of new to board games players and me, and we played it thinking it seems quite light, you just create numbers and then you just scratch off on the map, but it's supposed to say it took about 30 to 60 minutes. They say, I don't think that's right, but it took us about 4.5 hours.
Oh my god.
And we were like, oh god. I mean, there was a little bit of this AP analysis paralysis where people were thinking about how do I pair up the numbers and what do I do with them? But the reason it took so long is because we played with the rule kind of very wrong. Which is the dreaded nightmare when you introduce games to groups.
Who was teaching the rules there, Russ?
Oh, it was definitely me, and I definitely own up to that. But it was because there's specific rules to each map. There's four different maps in the game, and the specific rule to this map was if you activate a certain kind of room, it does one damage to all of the monsters. So we were like running out of rooms to go into, and like we were getting down to like health. In fact, three of the players ran out of health during the game, and I had barely any left. And it was because we would slow ourselves down from missing out this rule that was in the back of the book.
Right.
Not a problem. It was still a fun game. The only thing is that it's definitely harder for even myself as a sort of seasoned gamer to come up with like the combinations of the dice when all of the four dice are different values. Like, right. It's just trying to, in your head, because everyone's using these dice, the active player gets to pair it, but the other players get to use the four white dice as well, to pair up. So everyone's just in their head going, okay, so it's a 5 and a 9 and a 6 and an 8 and then or 2 sevens, and so you're trying to like keep those values in your head when trying to figure out which combination. You go, oh, I can use the 5 there and I can use the 7, no wait, I have a 5 and a 9. Oh, it's really frustrating. But apart from that, I actually think the game is pretty good. I'm not sure if it's a game I'll recommend. It doesn't feel like it's it's not as entry level as I thought it would be because of that, but it's still a really good game with really good artwork. It's quirky. It's quirky as well.
Yeah, I think like we can have a go at roll and write, but I'd much rather play a roll and write edition of a game than I would play a solo mode. I find like the solo modes can be like you're essentially setting up a huge game and just kind of going through the motions of something, whereas I feel like quite often the roll and write edition's much more like a like doing a crossword, which feels a lot more natural for me to be doing on my own, kind of rather than kind of, you know, if someone walks in on me doing a roll and write edition, I'm like, yeah, you know, just kind of fiddling about with this. If I've got a huge game of too many bones set up and it's just me, I'm like, well, feel like someone's walked in on me doing something sordid.
Yeah, you'd much rather be caught fiddling than boning. That's what I heard.
I couldn't put it any better, Ben. But yeah, I mean, I've played. I'm trying to move on.
saucy.
I've played some really good roll and writes this year, like. One of them is my most played game of the year, and I'm like, it's called Rustling Leaves by Paolo Mori.
Oh, that brings back traumatic memories of people used to my nickname at school, or people used to make fun of me saying "Rustle in the Bushes" because kids aren't creative.
No, we find that, don't we?
I just sighed and rolled my eyes again.
But that's a really nice one, and it's got that kind of really gentle aesthetic that you can kind of just ease into.
Each of these roll and rights. So we played a game of Quinto recently, which is a game where you roll the dice and then you stick the dice in a little
three different colored tracks and different colored dice, and you try and put your numbers in the right places to score the most points.
And I found with that one. That me and Ben had almost an identical board.
90% of our board was the same.
It was. So I feel like with the roll and rights, I've played a couple where you can fall into that trap where you end up having the same board as somebody else. And I've seen it in a few board games. The ones that you are talking about, are they similar? Is there some way of differentiating? You start from a different area?
Yeah, so the one I was talking about, Rusting Leaves, there's six starting points on the board, and each person has a different starting point. So you can't have the same thing, and you do have different options.
Yeah,
I've played the game that I was saying about. There's many options for you to start, and not everybody has to pick the same pair.
Right.
There was a little bit of similarity in the first couple of moves, but it digresses so differently. And I've played enough games of Quinto, by the way. One of my friends, Ben, who really likes that game as well. Not you, Ben. Obviously, you know, you would know that. But he calls it like, this might not be an appropriate reference, but he says it's almost like the sexually transmitted disease of roll and write board games, because it says once you've introduced that board game to somebody, then that gets introduced to other people and they buy it, and then it just gets spread all over. He likes to refer to Quinto as that. That game, I've played enough of it I've never seen anyone as similar as you two have played.
Really?
So that was kind of weird, but
brains in sync.
Yeah. Exactly. Or just copying from each other's notes.
I was actually not looking at it.
Exactly. I was like, okay, we've rolled the dice. I'm going to stare at my own board until I've written a number in. And I was like, good choice, Ben. Good choice.
But it is important to note that they didn't win.
No, that's true. We nearly did. If we'd rolled like a 17 or an 18 at any point in the game.
So the big thing is that there's three dice that you can roll. And we thought
we got greedy.
We thought that you could roll a lot higher on average than we did. So we just placed it.
I figured there'd be a 17 or an 18 at some point in the game.
Yeah.
People always fall into that trap in that game, and I love it. It's like the first time you teach a game and you know that there's going to be a thing that they come across that's going to, you know, cause them some frustration. For example, in Lost Cities, the card game, which is a fantastic game, I never tell people that when you get to the end of the game, those eight cards in your hand, you will not get to play. So whenever I teach it to a new group, they basically play on thinking, I've got all these tasty cards in my hand, I'm going to be able to play. And suddenly they realize about four turns before the end that they can't play these eight cards. And so they go to the end of the game kind of like a little bit frustrated at that, but then going, okay, next time I know exactly what I'm going to do. And I think that's okay to not tell people about that, but it's kind of fun to observe.
You don't tell them this purely so they have to come back and play a second game. You like, hey, here's the first few grams are free.
not even because of that, because I think it's actually important for people to experience some things like that in a game. If it was something that that I think people would actively be annoyed at and frustrated and rage quit the game, I would tell people that in advance. But if it's something that is enough of like I should have thought about that, and they had the tools to get there themselves, but they just didn't think of it, I'm totally okay with letting people get into that trap.
I think that's fair because it's a fast game as well.
Yeah.
So you're by the end of it, you're like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. But it's not like, for example, a longer game where if you didn't realize, like if I'm teaching someone Agricola, I would explain to them, you do want to get another room and another person quite soon. Because otherwise you get an hour into a 2-hour game and you're like, I've completely fucked this and there's no coming back because I've totally missed this like really important economic thing I needed to invest in at the start.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to leave someone like for 2/3 of the game just with no hope, because they're not going to want to play it again after that.
But, you know, you all have a basic rudimentary understanding of maths and odds. So I feel like, you know, rolling an 18 is not that common. Like,
it's so common.
On 3D6.
It's a 1 in 200 and something chance.
How many rolls did we have around the table? Because there were four players and we must have gone around about 20 times?
Yeah, it's like a good few turns in there. Probably at least 15 to 20.
If we say 20 times by 4...
So you'd see an 18.
There's 80 rolls.
The proof is in the put. No, because remember you're using numbers from other players' turns as well. So it's just however many gaps.
Maths.
Oh, that's why I thought 17. You know, that's like a 1 in 100 chance, right? Yeah,
but the proof's in the pudding. We didn't roll a 17 or an 18 in the entire game.
But if we had, we would have won.
Exactly. We were shafted only by the dice. Nothing to do with our choices.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hello, I'm Wheels, the Dungeon Master for Storybreakers. Love Critical Role and movies like Hot Fuzz and Spotlight? Actual play series Storybreakers combines the fantasy adventure of Dungeons & Dragons with small-town comedy and mystery in an episodic tale of journalists on the hunt for the secret underbelly of a tiny town where nothing seems to happen.
But excuse me if I don't think a bunch of ragtag journalists from a podunk town are actually going to be of any help.
But technically, I don't come from here.
When the mysterious arrival of a celebrity from the Heroes and Adventurers Guild sets off a strange conspiracy, the group will have to leave what they think they know about the world at the door if they're ever to unravel the truth at the heart of this seemingly nondescript town.
It's not front page of the Sasai Star News.
I pull up the today's like installment of the news to see what the front page actually is.
There's a big picture of a pumpkin that's been stepped on, and it says, "Outrage as pumpkin stepped on."
Storybreaker Season 1 in its entirety is available for listening right now wherever you get your podcasts, with Season 2 on the way. Find out more at dicebreaker.com.
I think what we've come out of here is that if you're bad at games, it's because you were bad at school.
Yeah. I wasn't allowed my spreadsheet, so they said that was an unfair advantage, so I had to cut you know what, I went away, did the spirit maths, figured it out.
That's it. I've drawn my matrix now.
Yeah.
There is
the flow diagrams assembled.
Yeah.
There is one other game. I realize I've talked a lot, so sorry. But there is one other game in that sort of genre which I've really enjoyed lately, and it's called The Guilds of Merchants and Explorers. Has anyone played that?
I have not.
Again, there's those three words are definitely in the title, but in which order I'm not 100% sure. But it's a game where you've got a map and it's basically a hexagon based map, some different types of regions. You've got sand, you've got like field, you've got mountains, and it's a small, not deck building element to it, but there's like a small deck, and each time you reveal it, and it tells you which regions you need to expand into, and you place cubes. You're basically creating routes. You're trying to get to the point scoring pieces on the locations on this map. But the cool thing about this is that when you reveal a certain type of card, and they add more of these in during the game, you get two cards which are like really powerful ones. The usual cards that you get told is either like one or two like regions you can move into, so they're kind of weak. But when you reveal the one card, you get to draw two powerful expanding cards. It might be like you can go as many sea spaces as you want, as long as it's in a straight line, or you can use like five spaces as long as they're these two region types. So they're really powerful. So you get to choose which one you'd like to keep, and then as the rest of the game, you're going to have four rounds of this game in total. So that one card is going to come up four times, meaning you get to use this really powerful card four times during the game. So after you've like resolved it and you've scored some points, basically anything you basically board almost resets. So you're going to go back to the thing, except if you completely fill a region, you can turn one of those spaces into like a, you know, like a Catan settlement, one of those little houses. And if you get one of those, you can start expanding from there next time instead. So it's got this like kind of slow building up element to it, but it's really good. I mean, I don't think I've done a great job of explaining how good it is, but it's very light. It's very easy to grasp, and that the artwork is also kind of, you know, it does the job, but it's a really nice light game with a flip and place kind of element to it that I really would love to try and recommend in future, because it's a fantastic game. I'll just learn how better to describe it by then.
And which order the three words come in.
That's right, yes, that's right.
I can confirm it's The Guild of Merchant Explorers.
There we go. So those three words were definitely in there. Thank you, Dickie.
Nice. Well, we've talked a bit about board games. We've briefly mentioned some guests that have been on here. Is there any... So the announcement is that next season will be slightly different. What we're going to do is we're going to go on tour.
What?
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be inviting people who aren't just in the UK. We're going to be trying to talk to people over anywhere. So in the US and various other bits. Not that everybody is US and then other. We don't
Yes, there are three places in the world.
Yes.
England, America, and everywhere else.
Exactly. So we're going to be inviting those guys on. And I think it's going to be really, really interesting. So
yeah.
We have a good opportunity to invite anybody who can't get to Bristol into this room and have a chat. And I think it really opens up the possibilities for who's about.
So, yeah, so if you can think of anyone who would be fun fit or you think would be into this as a guest, let us know. Give me a tweet or leave a comment.
Tag them. Let them know that you really want to see them.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'd be easy. Good way of getting us to start a conversation with them.
Then it'd be really awkward if they said no.
It would be.
Nah.
But
I'm used to that.
Yeah. Rejection. No, it's cool. So I think we're gonna be reaching out to a bunch of other board game publishers. I mean, we had Bez on this season, and I really enjoyed her episode. I thought it was really interesting. She's such a creative character, and her games are obviously fantastic. Fantastic as well. I feel like I'm always carrying one of her games now in my backpack. It's just fantastic.
So one thing I did want to bring up was I recommended Ultra last season. And we were just talking about this before the podcast, so I thought we'd put a pin in that and we're going to have it live. Because it's a game I was very excited about when I first started playing it. I played it a couple of times and I was like, this is great fun. But I just wanted to basically say I've kind of changed my opinion on it now. It's one of those games that I found by googling I want a game that is cooperative and fantasy based, and you know, that's how I found it, and it's not quite lived up to what I wanted from it. And this conversation came up because you have recently played it as well, right?
Yeah, it's like, you know, because you recommended that game.
And, made it sound really great.
And we got...
Yeah, I probably oversold it.
Well, honestly. Well, it won. So do we deduct a point for that?
No, I'm kidding.
That's last season. It's too late. I've already eaten that point.
like a game that won. So obviously we got it for Chance Encounters. If you want to try it yourself, you will be able to try it if you come to Bristol. And yeah, I played it. And I will say I had a fun time with it. The theme, you're definitely right, the theme is fun. You play as these rangers and you know you've got to deal with all these kind of problems. There are cards on the board that are incidents and you don't know what's going to happen, but it usually involves like trying to pass a skill test, rolling dice, etc.,
spending resources or
and I really liked it. I had fun with it, but as one of my friends who I played it with said at the end, said I feel like less like I was playing the game and the game was playing us, in that there was usually kind of an obvious thing to do.
Yeah, you feel like the optimal play is always fairly obvious and you're not making a lot of decisions.
But even despite that, you know, the mystery of what could be on the other side of these cards and trying to sort of like, I guess with a game like Pandemic or any, you know, Forbidden Island or something, there's usually a lot more variables at play, and trying to come up with the solution to the problem or the best solution to the problem is still a bit of a, like, you need to think a bit. And in this game, there was still some strategizing about what the optimal, like, moves were, but it was much less. And I feel like I realized in playing that that's probably the fun bit of these kind of cooperative games is, like, against the odds, like it doesn't seem like, you know, we are able to defend that zone or solve that problem, and yet you do and you get that sense of satisfaction. But we never had that moment of yes, we did it in this game.
Or do you feel like you're kind of just on top of it and ticking over?
Yeah, and even I actually watched a gameplay of it on a channel, a rival board game channel, and they had a tough time solving the first thing, and we played exactly the same scenario. We're like, kind of breezed through it.
The first scenario is super easy. I'm really surprised anyone had trouble with that.
So maybe I guess
their guru taught them an incorrect rule.
Maybe.
Well, I this time we definitely played by the correct rules.
How many players did you play with as well?
We played it with three players.
Okay, because personally, I think any more than two players is too many.
Yeah.
Just because of the game is the same length regardless of the number of players.
Mm.
So every time you add a new player, all you're essentially doing is splitting the gameplay pie more ways.
Right.
So two people playing that game get to eat half a pie each. four people playing get a quarter of a pie each. Do you see what I mean? Because you take the same number of actions in the game because there's a ticking clock.
Mm.
And that doesn't get extended for the number of players. So I played it twice two player and quite enjoyed it. And then I played it three player and I was like, this is just less game.
It's like it's as if it says serving serves four on the box, but we all know you divide that number by two, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Four people can have an appetizer or two people can have a meal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another warning I want to put on that game. I think I wouldn't play it with more than two players.
I'll give it credit. It has a really cool storage solution because the game comes with four kind of boxes with flaps. So the game has its own inbuilt storage system.
It's a meta box.
Mm. Yeah, it's cool. So all the cards, the small cards go in one box. You just flip open that and you've just got the cards nicely stored in there.
It's got its own cardboard organizer, essentially. You don't have to buy one of those add-ons.
More of that, please, publishers.
And I wonder if there's a way to patch it and just to add that extra layer of uncertainty and complexity on top.
Maybe they've done it.
Some extra mechanic or something. It's quite a new game, so I don't know if they would have done anything with it.
Yeah, also, that's how you sell expansions, Ben.
Right, yeah. You just remove an essential part of the game and sell it at a later date.
Exactly. Yeah. This game is just good enough without it. We can add it on later.
Dickie's now being promoted to head of board game creation.
Did you have any games that you tried after being...
Yes, but it was a game that I'd played before. Blood on the Clock Tower.
Yeah.
I've played a lot as one of the players. But this year, since it was recommended on the pod, I've actually now run a couple of games as the storyteller, which has been a very, very different experience. Mm. So I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, what's that like?
The first game I had of it, absolutely brilliant in terms of running it, was fantastic.
We should probably say
really
this
well.
Is like a more elaborate version of Werewolf, essentially.
Yes,
where you have hidden roles and a narrator flows through the game structure.
Absolutely,
and probably minimum of eight players or something like that.
Yeah, I think you want at least eight to run it kind of well. I played it with 13 players, then me as the storyteller. So it was quite a big game, did it for my birthday, went really well.
Mm.
I then took it on a little holiday we had and did it with 14 players, and it was a completely different experience. It's such a wildly different kind of game. The first time I played it was with some of our staff, actually. It was a really interactive game. People went off and had lots of secret conversations, and when I took it away, I played it with people who I think they would admit they're normally more Euro gamers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was much more, they treated it just as a logic puzzle.
Right.
Oh. It was really interesting to see. And you can kind of do that. It's not just kind of, because everyone's got a different power and everyone's getting different information, they could treat it more as as a logic puzzle and kind of work out who was what. And if this is true, then this can't be. It was, a lot of them.
More deduction based.
Exactly.
They
treated it kind of like programmers, you know.
I just this whole thing of information that has to be true or not true, and then I'm normally playing a game and I go, fuck, I have totally said something incorrectly.
Oh shit.
I think we were playing It Sounds Fishy, and then you'd go around the table and then you'd be like, somebody isn't the truth teller, it hasn't come up.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, I'd be so distraught. I'm like, I'm so sorry, everyone, it's me.
Start
and
again.
It's just been so bad.
I mean, it's one of those things that Blood on the Clock Tower kind of fixes.
Yeah.
Because there isn't the set information, because one player might be drunk, in which case they're getting wrong information from the storyteller. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a character called the Poisoner who can make someone get wrong information, but only for a turn.
Mm.
And so it does kind of muddy the waters slightly. But actually, the second game I had with that group, I could kind of lean into the... So I put all of the logic puzzle kind of roles in, rather than leaving some out, which I'd done before. And it was another completely different game. Which... I will say it's really easy to get things wrong as the storyteller. And that can really affect a game. So you've got to be properly on it.
I have been on the receiving end of that.
Yeah, I know. I remember you said in your episode, it was one of these things where... I was running the game on very, very little sleep.
Bad idea.
And it was the worst idea. Like, I just powered down halfway through the second game. But yeah,
it's difficult because you are really the momentum that keeps the game moving.
Exactly. Yeah. Also, very, very, very wary of creaky floorboards. Because I was just walking around a room, they had everyone in a circle, and people could tell where I was stopping. So I had to like introduce like random detours into my running of the game to make sure that no one could tell who I'd been to at what point. Yeah.
I've watched, because I was curious, because I know I recommended the game, but I've had bad times with it. But I watched some people play Blood on the Clock Tower online. There is actually a decent sized community of people who play it and watch it online. And there's like some bespoke software that is used to sort of, it's really clever. There is actually a channel on Twitch that just does Blood on the Clock Tower all the time. Yeah. It's quite cool. So I watched a couple of games of that. And what I didn't realize until watching that, because you've got this host who is commentating the game, but they have to make decisions sometimes about when to call the game, or they have an influence over the game more so than in a game like narrated. Yeah, because you have to decide. I can't remember the examples in the stream that I watched, but they were definitely saying, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that because then, you know, then it doesn't give the good team a good enough chance to win.
Yeah, you've kind of got to balance the game a little bit. And that's it feels like it is a weight. It's a responsibility.
Yeah, that's like a hard role to play.
But it's just not like hard, cold rules. There is a flow to it. So it's almost like being a DM in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's much more akin to being a DM, which is great.
So we do this thing where for birthday presents, sometimes you'll write a little card and it'll have like a little clue or something. And so there's this balancing act of being like, hey, I'm gonna introduce what your birthday present is, but maybe you'll guess it, maybe you won't. It'll have to be very difficult. And then normally I'll be talking to my wife about, and I'll be like really excited about the kind of gift I've got her or something. And then I'll be like, oh yeah, it has. And then she instantly guesses it. And I'm the worst person because I give way too much information. So I think I'd be terrible at this one to like DMing it essentially. Because I think trying to accurately balance it will probably take me a few games. And I would hate to have to put 13 people through 5 games before I like actually understand where that balance lies.
Well, I think, you know, we've thought about doing kind of bigger games and, you know, we've actually got our staff do coming up, and there was potential of running it there at our kind of staff party.
Do you bring your own cape?
No, cape provided by the company. We'll talk about this after. But yeah, running it for 20 people is incredibly, that's his max player count, and that's incredibly intimidating.
Yeah.
Like I would have to make sure I was sober at a party to even be.
Why are you at the start party if you're going to be
make
sober?
It a possible thing. Like it's mind blowing the kind of amount of stuff you've got to go through
for the night.
And you know what you couldn't do? So you couldn't practice that solo in your living room.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's good. It's got some cheat sheets and it's got things that are kind of like little reminders that you can put everywhere. But it's a lot of admin, and I think like I have a renewed and refreshed appreciation for the people that have run the game before, because they've made it look effortless. Certainly the Blood on the Clock Tower guys that have been at cons, stuff like UK Games Expo and kind of Dragon Meet, where I've done it before. Mm. And they've just done such a wonderful job that obviously they do it more than I do, but they've done a fantastic job, and it's a lot to take on.
Mm. Yeah.
So I would kind of say that if it's something you're considering buying, like if you're going to be the one running the game, kind of Be prepared.
Like it's the kind of game that you have in groups and you know someone that's got it. In this case, I know you.
Yes.
Who has it. So if I was ever going to arrange something, I'd probably invite you. And so I guess you get more experience as a result of being the one who owns it in some
sense. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But then there's
that does mean you always end up having to take that role. You don't really get to play as a player.
Yeah. Mm. Would you want to play as a player after having DM'd it?
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. I'm lucky enough that I've got one of our mutual friends has also got it and runs games quite often, so I can. And what's nice is that they can come to me if they want to play, and I can come to them if I want to play. So I'm in the best of both worlds, which is nice.
Information do you need to be as a player? If I knew nothing about it, is it going to be a half an hour explanation?
No, it's a really straight in kind of vibe.
Okay.
There's it's kind of thought of a lot of it. There's a really lovely sheet, an A4 page that you just kind of read the basics off and in that order, and then the players know how to play and you're away. You can kind of do the edge cases and kind of, you know, rules lawyering as you go.
So if we were to do a practice round, how long would that take us? Would it be you can play one an evening, or is it you can play a couple?
I think you can play a couple in an evening. It does depend on the amount of players.
Yeah.
You know, each player is going to make it go on that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you could probably not. I mean, we knocked two out in about 3.5 hours.
Wow. Cool.
Okay. Yeah, which is good going. But yeah.
It's probably quite heavy. And then I find with those kind of games, if I've had a role previously and then I'm like, wait, what information is this evening's information? What did that person say that? Were they this? Were they did the devil? What's going on?
Was that even this game, or was that the last game?
Yeah, the last thing you want is everything blurring. Oh,
God, and everyone's really drunk.
That would definitely be me. I would just be struggling to retain the sort of memory about what people did in the game. And that's why I probably would be really bad at it.
Yeah. I feel like I would I'm mostly the designated driver because I don't drink, and so I feel like I'd end up being the designated GM on this one or something like that if I did pick it up, so perhaps a reason to avoid it. But no, that sounds really, really good. We do have a very one of the reasons that we're doing this roundtable episode is because over the season we have been slowly accumulating points. No one has given out 1,000,000 points on their episode this season, so there's
not them they're allowed to do that.
Yeah. They have no idea yet. But we do actually have a clear, well, not, it was up until the last episode it wasn't clear who it was that was actually going to win it.
I've not been keeping track.
Well, glad fortunately Russ was keeping track. But I now know. So up until I've been performing admirably. I have won one point this entire time. Thank you so much.
Is that better than last season?
No, I think I got one last season as well. Except for it was weighted that I think you may have got one or maybe 2 points last season. Mm-hmm. But this season you have been storming it. You've been doing very well. So up until the last episode, now if you've watched the last episode, you'll know this is pretty much the crowning speech, as it were. It was neck and neck between Ben and who we've grouped the gurus together
team
as
guru.
Team guru. So it was literally neck and neck as of the last episode. Because Russ unfortunately took it, it means that the gurus actually won. So congratulations.
Oh, well done.
Put it there, dude.
Well, no. If I'd realised it was so tight, I would have put more thought into my
recommendation. I thought you had a shot as well, Captain Sona. Yeah. I haven't played it, but you made it sound really exciting.
To be honest, I thought I was going to win. And then Matt was just like...
Yours sounded great.
I mean, we genuinely love Hive Mind. It's such a great game.
It's a great game and it fit the scenario really well.
And then he was just like, immediately discards it. I was like, oh, okay, thanks. But no, so
we
congratulations.
We are at the whims of the guests, unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what I've realised in doing this podcast is people are very unpredictable. I thought, for example, in the John Perkis episode, I thought Villainous was better than Galaxy Trucker, which doesn't actually go up to six players, yeah. even with the expansion. So I was like, oh, I was so sure I was going to win that. And then he's like, nope.
They actually rarely pick the one I think they're going to pick.
Yeah, I think that's it. I didn't think he was, like in the last episode, I didn't think he was going to pick me. And then he did. I was like, this is great. Because I knew I knew we'd won it for the Guru. So, yeah.
So that means that Dickie is unbeaten in the record of Titans. Oh. And now Russ is also joining in. So everybody, all the gurus, well done you. Yeah. Titan of board games. Yeah.
I feel like I put in a good showing this season. And and I'm happy we finally got it for the gurus.
Yeah. Well, the good news is you both get to keep your jobs as gurus. Well done. For another season.
The day that you don't beat me, well, there's going to be a reckoning.
Sounds like this is going to be a while.
Yeah, based on my current experience. But I think Battle for North Africa was really going to win that one. It was a really good recommendation. But no, well, congratulations. Is there any last things you wanted to say or...
So thanks to everyone that came on the show. And thanks for watching and listening to this. It's been really fun chatting about board games. One of my favorite things to talk about.
I can't get him to stop. I had to get a podcast just so he would like channel it
like
somewhere.
A pressure valve.
Exactly.
I'm a lot more relaxed this episode than I was at the beginning of the series. That's why. So
I've got so much to talk about.
And obviously it's been great, being on the podcast with you guys as well.
It's been great to have you all. I've really enjoyed it.
Right. We've had a load of guests who've, live and breathe board games, and it's been nice having the kind of real challenge of, because they've known a lot of the games that we've recommended. So it's kind of a bit more of a different experience, but I've loved it.
It's also great to see how vast and broad the world of board gaming is, because it's obviously a niche hobby.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys and the guests we've had have talked about so many games that not only played, but also I've never even heard of.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So there are, despite the fact that we all probably consider ourselves fairly well-versed in board games, that we can still all be surprised. It's just fantastic. Mm. What a golden age we live in.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for joining us with the series. If you like it, consider being that irritable friend of being like, hey, check out this series. It's been wonderful having you here. And I think that's all from us this season.
Yeah. Thank you so much for watching. Leave a like, leave a comment.
We love reading the comments.
We do.
Yeah. Recommend, come up with your own scenarios or recommend your own games. Because honestly, there's not enough comments. I want to see more.
And let us know who you'd like to see on series three as well.
Exactly.
Because we are going out
the
and about.
Our oyster.
Yeah.
Who knows? But thank you so much and have a good one. Bye.